Merry Christmas. And thank you for coming, especially because we know you have a really challenging schedule this week in particular. And the way that kind of series of events leading up. So I want to start by briefing you on where I think we are. And I hope Casey will be here shortly. I told him if his family would go evaluate. He said he would try to be here by 2 o'clock and explained to him that we would want to have some time with y'all prior to him coming. So if he does show up, we'll ask him just to be patient. But I think
here's the good news.
Thank you.
We wish good luck with Jen's baby.
On October 24th, the council authorized the memorandum of understanding that basically laid out the essential elements that we were to work towards the final agreement for. On February 27th, Dean Mollican made his report on the concept plan. On April 20th, we basically were able to conclude the negotiations with them on all the fundamental points. And I guess it's like probably 50 pages around something like that. But basically, it's complete. The problem is that the project that we started out with, I think, is changing because of the realities that RAM has encountered about cost of construction more than any other thing. On May 26th, I sent a notice to RAM explaining I was getting concerned that we had not heard back from them and we were running out of time to report to the committee and to the council. And as you know, that's the memorandum that ended up being put in the press file. And I found out who the idiot was who did that. It was me. And I was the one who did it, and I apologize. There have been a few others among the thousands that I've given to them that shouldn't have been given, but very few, and I'm sorry that one was. So on the whole, I think it probably didn't make any difference. You have to deal with it anyway.
Here we are, the way it was reported, the television protest.
Yeah. Then on June 6th, we met with Susan and in essence received a new proposal. And we provided material to you, some of which they provided to us, some of which is John's material. But here's the way it appears to me, just sort of an outline. Originally, we were going to have projects at Lot 5 and at the Wallace Deck. And at this point, they're saying the Wallace Deck numbers simply do not work for them. That the cost at the Wallace Deck don't work, they're too high, and that the revenues that they would get from Wallace won't offset. I asked them to consider whether or not doing the separate building at the Wallace site, as we referred to it, might still work, and I understand they're going to take that into consideration. They've come back to us with a proposal for Lot 5 that eliminates the underground parking and that provides parking on property next door that now is owned by the Carl and Exxon company and by the Walker Funeral Home company. As I understand it, they believe they have a good faith deal with Mr. McFarland and the family members. And if Mr. McFarland says he'll do something, it's in my experience that he will. That you can shake hands with him and he'll stick with it.
Bobby, I'm certainly.
Who?
Right across.
Yeah. The one who owns the station is his land.
That's right. I thought all along that had been owned by.
That's wrong.
Yeah. No. But, it doesn't matter. I'm wrong. Yeah. Okay.
And then Mr. Walker was ill for about a year and then died, and Ms. Walker now owns the funeral home. And they believe that they have a deal with her, provided they can relocate her to a different site and basically give her a turnkey deal. The site that they're interested in and believe that they could purchase is where Wilson's Landscape is, Gordon Boulevard, right next door to our cemetery. The portion that Wilson's building occupies, that Wilson's building occupies is then neighborhood commercial, And a funeral home is allowed in every commercial. There's one adjoining property, or two pieces of adjoining property, both of which are now zoned residential and have to be rezoned. But I've made a preliminary examination of that proposal, and on the whole, it looks reasonable, because it is neighborhood commercial, prominently in that area, and they'd be wrapping around Mindy's, which is a commercial site. They would have some challenge on impervious surface. They'd just have to meet that, and there'd be some traffic impact analysis work would have to be done. So that's a possibility. But they don't own either one of those right now, so they're talking about possibilities. In addition, they are not certain whether Ms. Walker, as they believe, owns two small parcels of property behind the funeral home and the parking lot. And I haven't had time to check on that. I believe that they do. If they do, then that would give them a big chunk of land immediately adjacent to our land. If they don't, it would be two little parcels right there.
Can you draw, I mean, if there's a drawing, I mean, essentially lot five is this, and what you're talking about getting is this.
That's correct.
What about that?
Is that out of that's the question they have. They're not sure who owns that, and I don't know that we know that.
Well, that's not that hard,
though. And I haven't included this in my memo, but there's a piece of town on land right there.
There's an intervening property, I think, in there. That's the general idea.
But I think it's contiguous.
I think it is, too.
Yeah,
I don't know at all. But in any case, what they propose at this point does not involve this parcel. What they propose is only the funeral home site and the Crowley's Exxon site. And so that would not give them frontage at the back of them.
Oh, Rosemary Street.
Rosemary Street. What they would do, they would have the frontage on Rosemary Street. That's correct. What they would do is put a drive between the two parcels of property and use that as an access point to get into a parking deck, which would be your above ground structure. They would then face that building on Franklin Street with ground level retail, and above that have dwellings. They would have the same sort of structure on the east side, so that you'd have a finished appearance there with retail. In ground level retail dwelling units above. They are proposing that all of the affordable housing be in that building that wraps around the parking structure. They say that it will be less expensive for them to do it that way, and that the cost of the homeowners association dues would be more moderate if they do it in that way. A lot of what they're proposing is not very clear to us. They gave us a big stack of stuff on June the 6th when they came in again. A lot of the stuff we've seen. They gave you all of the new material that they've provided. And it's not a complete proposal. It's very difficult to understand. It is not clear to me how they want us to participate in this deal. But what it looks like generally is this. When we were at the October Memorandum of Understanding point, we were working towards a deal in which we would put in $500,000 of our own money and the land, and that would be it. All the rest of the money would be paid to us in rent. We would pay it back to them to buy part of it. Now it appears, based on what they've given us and on the conversation we had with Susan, I haven't talked to Casey about this because he hasn't been around, but with Susan, it would appear that what they want us to do is to pay for $11 million worth of parking. And they would give us the land that they would obtain from McFarland and Walker. It is not clear to me what they would do about rents for our land. It's not clear if they think that there's some exchange of land that equals that out. What Susan has said about paying for parking is that they need for the town to consider tax increment financing, or self-funding financing, as it's called in North Carolina. And Greg knows some preliminary estimates. Kay looked at some of their numbers and couldn't match up to them. John is with some of their members. Basically, it stands the deal in a different direction. If you were willing to use tax increment financing, it creates a certain level of uncertainty. There is no certainty that the tax value of the properties once developed would meet the projections. There is no certainty that sales tax projections, which they included in their analysis, could actually meet projections. And the biggest uncertainty is we don't see how all this fits together yet. It's just not clear to us.
Sales tax is not an element of TIF.
That's it.
Now, Ralph has said that it is.
You can use that.
You can.
Which is a huge coup.
Originally, I didn't think that it was. I researched it and determined that it is. And so,
that's a big deal.
My gut feeling is there's still a deal in here somewhere. We just don't have enough information yet to figure it all out. And if you bear with us just a little bit longer, John has done some quick and dirty analysis just to get a sense of what you think some of the issues would be. If that'd be okay, I'd like to comment.
Cal, I have not yet handed out the materials that came in.
Go ahead and do that.
So, these came in first from John, that John got from Ram. After the packet, after your packet came in, can you turn it off?
This is very highlighted.
And then, Gordon,
sure.
Gordon's giving you. This is one that Graham gave to John, I guess, late Friday, that he used as a basis for a discussion that he's now going to have. So that modifies and updates the one that was in your packet. And we've got two memoranda from John that he prepared for you over the weekend.
This is the most current, just getting more and more of this trend, and we don't like what we're seeing in the marketplace. Some of us are having a tendency to change the deal a lot, and changing pro formas and not changing the building program, or changing the build program and not the pro forma. It's very disjointed. So one of the first things I'm going to ask Casey to do today is to give us a building program, a total development budget, a pro forma, and expected town investment. Because right now, all that's very disjointed. And this pro forma does not include some of the assumptions that they've made, and they were not the ones we made. So it's very difficult to get your hands on. So what we did is we took the book that was given to us by Susan on June 6th, and on June 8th, she's got a list of questions and clarifications. She ran. Then on June 16th, when we got back the package, we did a comparative analysis of the building program, the town non-tax income, and requested town investment. We did an analysis of the current deal structure proposed by RAM and discussion points for today's meeting. Part three is using RAM's performance submitted on June 16th. We reduced the development costs and included income to RAM and changed their pro forma from a negative 15.05, which you'll see on this most current one, to a positive 13.9. So we've done the best we can to be a problem solver in this situation, and we think we've practiced this enough. Now, we want to clarify their assumptions, though.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
There are some things that are not clear.
Yeah, not clear at all. But if you look at if the most important document you've got in front of you is the June 16th Lot 5 pro forma analysis.
On
street level. You just got about six of them bullet points. Would you assume we added the income from the 11 market rate rental housing units that they've added because of the annex? We dealt with the unit premiums upgrade.
I'm sorry, Jeff. This is really the first time any of us are looking at
this. Oh, okay.
This.
What annex?
Have you seen the annex master plan?
Have you seen
the annex master plan?
We haven't seen. We've seen the master plan. Yeah.
The only thing I get, there's master plan, but there's like a little picture in the packet. It's a handwritten one page. It was attached to the June 5th pro forma. This is all we have.
All the
right
this.
Here.
Okay, that's it. Look at the cost too. The
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all we have this week.
Okay, so the annex is the building next to the existing. No.
See, I think the column is the garage, the annex.
Yeah.
Or
what
are we talking about? The garage is, I imagine, one of these internal units that you can't see is there.
That's correct.
Because it's it's like an elevator shaft internal to the building.
That's right.
Well,
but
it goes out to the alley.
So I'm just telling you that that's what the general idea is.
Okay.
And I call it the annex.
Without having elevations, we don't know what it was.
The reason they say annex, I think, is. What I heard the day Susan came is that they don't want to make any changes to the Lot 5 plan, so that they want to keep that sort of intact in their strategy. And then they're calling this the annex because it's the additional property, and they would put the parking and the housing on that quote annex.
I just got to say, I'm having a hard time thinking about Lot 5 without Wallace Deck. So they can't just come in and say, forget Wallace Deck, just think about Lot 5.
Well,
we were really clear that this was a connected building program.
I think one reason why that's important is because you've lost about half your income, not that income, because of eliminating Wallace Deck as a project.
So
they're expecting $11 million worst case scenario, 8.4 for sure. So we've got to come up with cash of $3 or $4 million. You know, before the ball is set cash.
Well, I think they have to come up with cash of $11 million.
We'll find out today.
The reason I mentioned that in the beginning is that's the key point, because they say they're not willing to do all of that. Okay. Casey coming here today to talk to this committee?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let me just say, this is a project. Nobody will necessarily agree with it, and I know it can't probably be addressed for us, but it looks to me, it seems to me like if they have this much property, that the whole project is really good. That the parking that may not necessarily best go there. It might best go farther away from Columbia Street. The whole thing needs to be, this is making, if they're, and you just said, Chris, that they're not going to consider redesigning what you said. I think that's probably going to be their position. I don't know how it is when you guys feel about it. I'm just saying, in terms of our expectations and what this project is really could be and is, I'm really, this is to be sad.
I'll say that I have no problem with them keeping the other side intact. We've all got a huge investment in that.
That would be assumption that we couldn't do anything with this property, though.
We can go around for years redesigning and tweaking it. I don't personally have no problem with keeping what came out from the Dean Malka work sessions intact and looking at this other possibilities.
unless there are significant changes that are pending that we don't know about.
I'm just saying, if the two of us together as a team have had this amount of land, this configuration of land to begin with, the project would not likely have looked like it looked, and it would have looked better. And so this is their solution to a bad situation, and I'm prepared to live with that, but I don't want it.
One of the things they said,
Susan
said was, you know, no other people are going to have an interest in replanting the whole site, existing property in it. She said, we're not willing to pay for that. And we're not willing to do that. And I began just passing on what she said.
Well,
but I understand that point of view from a dollar standpoint. They're thinking they spent close to $1 million now. And
that must be amazing.
She also said that this important the ads for Cracker Street would be like a copy of the club.
Sure.
Well, I guess they would be a twin of it, basically.
And the same height?
As seen from Franklin Street.
I have not taken note of what height you're talking about.
Same finishes.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
They have the same quality of exterior appearance, yeah. And the same type of design.
Well, actually, I'm inclined to agree with Sally in a sense if you started the project with this piece of land, you would approach it differently and you would have a different design. The thing about this whole thing that scares me is that we're completely redoing a block on Franklin Street without an architect, essentially. I mean, as they said, we got Dean Alka involved in the beginning. But it's like, and so if we screw that up, it would be limited to just lot 5. But now we're potentially screwing up everything on that whole block, and that scares me. I don't believe, and also, I mean, just throwing out my first thought is, they've put together a piece of property that's almost equal to lot 5. Maybe they should just look at what they can do there all by themselves. I mean, I just wonder if that's not an option.
They can't do anything without us paying for the parking, is what they're saying.
Well, and that's, you see, to me, this deal has changed so much that it's almost like, I don't know what the legal obligations we have, but I don't know that we're no longer negotiating the low bidder. I mean, they are the low bidder as identified. I also think going back out is not going to get us anything. But I just wonder, I mean, the project's changed to such a degree that we have a right to certainly look at it differently. And I don't know if we have an obligation or not. The absence of one
obligation.
We don't.
Okay. I don't think you do. Maybe we're out there.
No. You were saying, okay. Also, the absence of the Wallace deck, which to me had gone from, they kept saying at the beginning that this was something they were wary of. And then it became seemingly a much simpler project, and I'm surprised to find that they decided the cost estimates on that are put it out. But to me, it was a much simpler thing to build. And so I'm sort of surprised that that's the part that scared them all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Me too. And I can explain the reason better than I can.
Yeah.
I don't know all the reason. I'm not privy to all that. But part of what I understood Susan to say is it's the number of affordable units that requires that tips them over the edge and makes it unworkable for them. But they'd have to, I can't speak for them, I don't work for them, I work for you guys, and I've just been trying to piece together enough to convey you what their interests are at this point.
Okay, and then one divergent question that we've been after from the Inquisitory Zoning Task Force, is it possible to set up a different class of homeowner association dues for affordable housing?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Well, I can share the information that Robert Dowden has
here. Well, Robert also has a question with us. And the question, and flesh it out a little bit, is condo fees are based on your proportional square, they're not equally based on what your share of square footage in the whole thing. That's all I understand.
Well, his opinion says that it may be possible to do it differently. Instead of doing it on square footage, do it on value.
That's what we're asking, is whether that's
really
possible.
Robert, this is really getting to be third hand, you know, but as I understand it from talking with Robert, we meet once a month just to talk. he believes that his attorney has found a mechanism that they can use so that instead of doing it the normal way, which is on square footage proportional interest, to do it on cost proportional interest. And tax payments can never work better, be more favorable.
But or it would, at a minimum, make it even possible. I mean, because it looks like the homeowners association do in all of these projects is going are gonna be prohibitive.
They could be higher than the mortgage in the case of some of the affordable units.
So that doesn't go to the question of why Casey's saying he can't even afford to build it on the wall.
Well, he's, yeah, I agree, but this would make it.
Casey hasn't said anything. Susan's his representative.
Right. Susan's been talking about the affordable every time I talk to her in the last 6 months, which is 2 or 3 times. Mm-hmm. She's floated these. You know, we'll give you $6 million for not building
a building. So it's not just the cost of construction going up.
I don't know who would be affordable parking. You never have. But very few developers do, you know. It's sort of like a wart on the end of their nose. They have to look at it every day. And that's a problem for them. They just don't want it. They'd rather not be there.
So isn't this what that other bidder that we didn't see tell us would happen?
Simply.
The only difference
what
is this
here. The
only difference is the cost would have been $2 million higher. Grove said it was $13 million, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. What's supposed to happen, frankly, is we just what we I hate to say I told you so, but construction costs have gone 25-30% in the last year.
Yeah.
And we're paying the price for it.
And that's what we're saying.
That's why they wanted the equal amount of money that we were going to give them on the wall stack for lot 5 there.
Right, then we're contesting that the construction rates have gone up to 35%, which is part of why I said, let's just leave this other part of the design alone if we're going to proceed, because we'll go for another year around and around.
Okay,
Hi, Jason, how are you?
He's in our office.
This reminds me, I want to make sure you guys understand that just a quick math. If this is the construction cost keep going up 30% a year, they're probably 2.5% a month, which is in this case for $2.5 million a month. So you've really got to do everything you can to close this deal and get home.
But you know, the costs continue to rise. I mean, I hear that, and I'm totally aware of that. However, if costs continue to rise to that point, that by the time this thing gets built, it'll be a waste of time. I mean, I'm serious. If the price of housing in these things goes up 30% a year, which is what you're talking about, you're going to be priced out of the market.
Right.
I think.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I don't believe they're going to. They can't.
I know Patterson selling his for what, $600 to $1 million.
They're selling, right?
Yeah, I agree, but his are lots bigger than this. I'm not saying that they, all I'm saying is just that construction costs rise 30% next year too, and our world as we know it's going to change.
Well, what they can sell.
I mean, between that and gas and healthcare.
I have a suggestion that I would ask you to consider this as a way of moving it forward. One is to let Casey come in and answer questions. The other is, assuming his approach is still demonstrable that he's really interested in this, wants to make it work, let us work with John and John with Casey to put a real proposal on the table, because this is not a real proposal. Yeah, this is a question of ideas.
So just going to get hard to analyze it. I mean, well, it's not a bad idea, because let me show you, let's go back to this memo real quick before Casey comes in. Can we go back to this memo?
Yeah.
We've seen 6 or 7 deal points, and we were able to convert this minus 15% return to plus 14%. So what's going to mean?
Does the minus 14% have $1 million in the town?
Here's what you need to look at. This pro forma for where this is the last thing we got. We took this pro forma made these changes and converted it from a minus 16% to plus 14%.
You don't have that written down anywhere.
Just on this page here.
Where does it say 15%? Oh, it says on the bottom line, it says your current cost minus 15.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I see that. Okay, that's fine.
That's the sensitivity analysis.
That's right. That's my point. And what we're also worried about, really worried about, quite frankly, is why they're not trying to solve this problem. Why is he coming back to us with a negative ROC? It blows my mind. I mean, if we did this in 24 hours, why aren't they doing it?
She should ask us for $11.
Exactly. That's my point.
There's already $11 in this. That's not... It's really so fuzzy and disjointed that I can't tell what they're proposing. That's the thing that bothers me.
Well,
I can't do an analysis of this because it's incoherent.
They just have to all give us a comprehensive report.
No, and so these changes you make indicate no extra.